Lead UX, the User Experience Leadership Circle, hosted by Dr. Thomas Führinger-Kuhnt.
And if you're juggling a lot of responsibilities with your team members as a UX leader, with your stakeholders and your personal life too, because my approach to our careers, none of us live in isolation. You also have a private life. So you got to be organized. For me, thought leadership is very important in UX. And although I no longer work in a big tech organization, I consider myself still a UXer first and a career coach second. So for that reason, together with Javier Vargas, ex-Google director, he now is also working as a coach, we are running a global UX burnout study. Because when my clients come in, Thomas, and they're like, I want to achieve this, I want to do that, I don't just take it for granted and go towards that goal as a copy-paste, like, okay, let's do this. I want to understand first where that goal comes from. What is the goal behind the goal? What it is that they want to achieve through that goal? What's the impact they want to create? Who are they? How they think of themselves? What are the stories that they tell to themselves and others about themselves? So there is that great self-understanding that needs to be obtained, right? So clarity is about that.
Wir bedanken uns bei unserem Sponsor, CodeWord Customer Consulting GmbH, deinem Coaching-Partner in der sich ständig weiterentwickelnden Landschaft des UX-Leadership. Bist du ein UX-Professional und möchtest deine Karriere gerne auf ein nächstes Level heben? Dann melde dich gerne für ein 1:1-Mentoring oder individuelle CV- und Portfolio-Reviews. Die Kontaktdaten findest du in den Shownotes und wir freuen uns sehr darauf, noch heute von dir zu hören.
Welcome to another episode of Lead UX, the User Experience Leadership Circle, your compass through the ever-evolving landscape of UX leadership and UX maturity in organizations. My guest today is Mel. She's a UX career coach located in Barcelona, and I'm really happy to have you here today and talk about UX leadership and career coaching.
Thank you so much, Thomas. It's so amazing to be here.
Yeah, great. So usually I ask my guests in the beginning to just a little bit introduce themselves, talk about their background and their career path so far, because I think that's quite interesting to learn also how people, you know, grew into their current job roles and professional roles in UX.
Absolutely.
So how, yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Sounds great. It's been about a year and a half that I've started my business. I'm a knowledge entrepreneur. This is how I like to think of myself. I founded Career with Mel, and I've uniquely position myself as a UX career coach because I've noticed that there were particular challenges as well as opportunities that involved, for UXers in particular, there is that contextual knowledge that I had gathered myself over a decade of UX research leadership in organizations that are startups, in bigger enterprises, having worked in consultancy setups as well as in-house. So my background to respond to that comes from UX research leadership. I worked across different industries and different sizes of teams, having worked in areas such as e-commerce, food delivery, auto industry, pharmaceuticals, many others, you name it. And my starting point prior to UX is from investigative journalism. So I've done a lot of journalistic work, which Thomas, I think, influenced how I shared my reports, why I cared so much about velocity at quality and everything around, relationship with stakeholders and how to communicate the right way and so on. So those are deeply rooted in my career even prior to UX, and you introduced me so well, so there's no reason to add more, but I'm based in beautiful Barcelona. I feel deeply proud of the city and the kind of talent that it attracts. And finally, I'm a mother of two young children aged 3 and 5. So of course, being a mother also influences how I work and the kind of business that I built.
That's really interesting. I think you're the first one I interview with a background in journalism. So that's unique, yeah. I think, and definitely interesting. So what made you to choose this career path, moving from investigative journalism to the UX field?
That's right. One thing I would say, stepping back, Thomas, is that in both fields, the key component is asking tough questions, gathering knowledge, cross-examining your sources, and coming up with results, whether it is for the general public at large or for your stakeholders. So in that regard, there are indeed parallels, the kind of critical thinking skills that you require as UXers and investigative journalists, there are parallels. That being said, I, especially after my investigative journalism career, have done my graduate degree. And after my graduate degree, my focus was actually on media and cultural studies. I was asking very hard questions to myself. I was like, at the end of the day, I want to create impact. And as much as I cared about, to be very frank with you, the stories that I wrote, it was hard to build up because every day there is a new piece. Of course, some areas of investigative journalism delivers momentum, but some of them don't. So I was asking myself, okay, these are my skill sets. These are the areas in which I'm talented. Where can I apply these tools, these skills and experience and so on? And back then, there was a huge need for UX researchers. The tech bubble was, massively growing. And I have realized that, wow, I had a lot of, network, a lot of engineers, designers, and so on. And it was clear to me that a lot of digital products, Thomas, they were built with the engineering expertise, but with lack of research to understand what the users really needed, right? So I figured that, okay, tech is growing massively, and we need people like myself to make sure that we understand the user needs and pain points and desires and understood a little bit their lifestyles to deliver tech solutions that fit with what they needed. So I wanted to position myself that way for the greatest impact, to be honest.
Fun fact, interestingly, my wife also worked in media. So I know this really a fast-paced business. And in Germany, we have a saying which goes, there's nothing older than yesterday's newspaper.
Here you go. Exactly. My obsession with delivering quality at velocity comes from, just like your wife probably commented, Thomas, on those days, because, there's a school of thought where, we need to take our time, deliver the best results, perfectionism. We in UX, sometimes we don't want to show our work because we feel uncomfortable to receive feedback to the early iteration of our projects. But as a journalist at core, I'm like, no, that's too late. You can write the best news story in the world. For it to be news, it has to be new.
Yeah,
exactly. And it has to be timely. That's right.
Exactly. So and now after you moved into the UX field, so besides of your kids, what gets you up in the morning? So
that's right. Well, that's a good one for new parents out there. I'm curious when you publish this bit, who responds to this question? Because my work is also my baby. I am doing the work as a UX career coach, and I'm doing the work around the work, such as marketing and sales and my invoices, maintaining my pipeline, all those things. So that, together with taking care of two young children, is a lot of work. No question about it. But I'm an avid biker, so I like to go around the city with my Brompton. I bike a lot. I love to go to the beach. More and more, I like the opportunities to hike. So anytime I can be with nature, anytime I can move my body, it can be weight training or it can be biking, it can be anything else, it's great. And you might know that, of course, living in Barcelona is an extremely social city. People go out to socialize a lot. And that's a big part of who I am. And what I like to do, to meet people, understand their stories. Again, a circle back to journalism, right?
Yeah, true.
So, yeah.
So, and also to keep up such a lifestyle, you have to be quite organized, well structured, I think, which also brings me then back. So being well organized, being structured, being social, to those are all skills that also UX leaders so need. So what do what would you add maybe also to those soft skills? What makes actually good UX leaders in your point of view?
I like that you brought up the organizational skills. I know it's not sexy. It doesn't talk about genius. But hey, let me tell you, there is only 24 hours a day. And if you're juggling a lot of responsibilities with your team members as a UX leader, with your stakeholders and your personal life too, because my approach to our careers, none of us live in isolation. You also have a private life. So you got to be organized. And for me, what being organized means to have the overview of all the things that are taking place, all the things that you're anticipating for what's to come, and having clear values and success metrics to understand the kind of things that need to be prioritized. I'll give a very tangible example because I hate to leave things with the language of abstraction, right? So what I just said, for example, for me, thought leadership is very important in UX. And although I no longer work in a big tech organization, I consider myself still a UXer first and a career coach second. So for that reason, together with Javier Vargas, ex-Google director, he now is also working as a coach, we are running a global UX burnout study. So a lot of it has been over the last months interviewing with the UX professionals across the world, advertising our work to generate visibility, running a survey, analyzing the survey results. And now we are also preparing our material for presentation in Austria in October, World Usability Congress. Why do I bring that example? Because if this is important to me, it has to be reflected on my calendar. So I proactively book slots in my calendar so that anything that might feel more urgent but doesn't really result in impact doesn't eat up space in my calendar to do this important piece of work. So if you care about it, make time for it. And there's no better way than making time for it to have it in your calendar insistently and consistently. So that those are sort of the things that I do. I'm very much a fan of my Google Calendar. I am a big fan of setting reminders to myself so that I can liberate space in my mind for the creative work. So I don't have to constantly thinking about, am I missing out? Do I have to be anywhere that I don't remember? No, I actually have it in front of me.
Yeah, that's a great approach. And also something aspiring UX leaders maybe need to learn, because if you are UXer on working level, maybe you have that time to concentrate on things, maybe even for several hours, maybe. But right. I also experience myself. So the more you grow into like leadership roles, the more input you get and the short term feedback is required. So organization is really something I also think that's really important.
Absolutely.
It's something to learn. And one reason for me to also start this podcast is that I experience from a lot of talks with others that quite often people are not really trained in those skills they actually need as leaders, besides the technical knowledge and the thought leadership. So and that's also maybe, I don't know, maybe was a motivation for you and your career coaching approach, maybe.
Okay, so let me say what I just heard in my own words, and we can see how much of that is accurate. What you're telling me, Thomas, speaks of energy management as well as time management, because indeed, when you grow in your UX career, your challenges are less about, you know, creating this flow, working on Figma, but more to do with handling problems all at the same time, going in parallel, right? And so it's important to create space for that. It's important to be intentional about it. One of the areas, for instance, I work with UX leaders in my career coaching, whether they are senior ICs or they're in the management track, is to prioritize and be intentional, right? If you divide yourself too thin, if you start the week wanting to accomplish 30 things, there is a chance that you're going to just go halfway. And at the end of the day, there isn't much results to show. So being intentional about what matters, having that clarity and having a clear notion of how you're going to get there, being able to simplify what you need to do and why, so that is very clear to you, is an important part of what I do as a small business owner, let's put it that way, and also what I enforce for my clients.
Mm-hmm. So coming back to this burnout study you mentioned, so I guess you cannot share yet results because you prepare that for the Gold Usability Congress. But maybe you can talk a little bit about data collection or what the focus of this research is. And
I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. Let me give you a bit of sneak peek. And for those who want to know more, everything we've been doing so far are on my LinkedIn post. I made it very clear from the recruiting process for the study to sharing preliminary results from interviews and inviting folks to have the survey. The survey link is out there. I wrote for the bootcamp, part of UX Collective publication on Medium. So everything I've run, just as a good journalist, I haven't waited until the end. The news has been iteratively shared. But let me share with you in bullet points, Thomas, what drove me to run the study and why Javier was also excited to team up with me. So far, burnout experience in UX in particular is an isolated individual experience. However, this is problematic because there are systemic reasons why, you know, there is UX-led reasons that could trigger burnout because we work in ways that we have a lot of responsibility, a lot of, challenges to overcome to succeed in our organizations, and yet we usually have very little autonomy, right? Our work is very dependent on the engineering leadership's decision, on the product leaders, but business stakeholders. So we are in this, I don't want to call it an impossible situation, but a very difficult situation. And waves of layoffs and reorgs and uncertainty on a global level across different fields within tech and across the world didn't really help. So when people, I mean UXers, heavy responsibilities, their team sizes shrink, and yet their responsibilities increase, the timelines are a lot more tight even. It's really messed up with the well-being of people, it seems, and it seemed important for us to understand the real mechanisms behind it, to be able to figure out the ways that we can empower people to address burnout, ideally before it happens, and really understand how people recovered from burnout and basically come up with a study that examines this phenomena across different roles within UX, across seniority levels, the types of organizations. So we felt that it was important that people in UX no longer suffer through burnout individually, and yet they had a language to talk about it, a respectable framework within which the study was based, and starting from an increased degree of awareness and proactivity to have a little more autonomy in one's career. I think this is what we need the most as UX professionals.
So do you focus more on the people doing the actual work, so on working level, or do you also focus on the leaders or maybe also the relationship? Because the more pressure the working level people have, the more responsibility the leaders have to actually create a working environment for the working level people to actually
do good
work and survive in the tougher environments. Yeah.
It's a good question. Let me start by talking about how we set the survey up, because that's final. We are no longer running the survey. We're in the phase of analyzing our results. And one of the first questions we asked was the degree of experience people had, how many years within which they were operating in UX, so that every question we ask, we can also segment different groups. If they're coming from a perspective of being a junior UXer, mid-level, senior, so on and so forth. So that means that while this study that we ran for UX burnout is not exclusively for senior UXers, it is true that we have some parallels to draw for the senior UXers and understand how that compares to the rest of the UX community. It's too early to say because I don't want to tie myself to fixed results when we're still analyzing, but indeed there seems to be significant evidence to show that the burnout seems to increase with the seniority. There could be multiple factors. Like I said, we are looking at the results of each question separately and together to see what different interpretations we can make and how the interview findings support the reason why and the narrative around it. But indeed, it is true because it looks like the you know, burnout is something that doesn't happen from one day to the next. It accumulates in someone's body and mind. And if you're a senior professional buried under so many responsibilities and you don't have, just like a junior UXer might, a level of seniority to protect you from what's happening on the organizational level, and you've been exposed to this level of stress for so long, it's indeed true that this is another layer of challenges around there for the burnout. Not because you're not experienced, but to the contrary, because you're experienced and because you're exposed to those challenges and you don't get the support that you need from your organization at large.
And yeah, is there something also from your coaching experience that you observe that people tackle with or cannot cope with well when growing into leadership roles? Some typical observations when people get promoted, what they are struggling with?
I love this question because there is a major struggle I want to begin to mention. As you know, when you're a senior individual contributor, you can clarify with your leadership, this is your job description and these are the areas where you're responsible and you do the work. And based on how well you do the work, you'll have your degree of success. And yet when you're a manager, when you're a leader, we can use different languages because today, you know, some are more hybrid lead UXers and some of them are managers. You need to succeed through people because there is a lot less that you do yourself with the material. It is through inspiring people, offering creativity for people, convincing people, getting the buy-in for the stakeholders for the success of what your individual contributors will do. And it's extremely challenging. Because the moment your success depends on the work of others, you need to understand each individual, what their pain points are, what their goals and needs are, articulate with the right language ways to motivate them, offer them clarity, and also collectively create a team spirit, a team vision. So these are very, very different skills compared to those that make an individual contributor succeed. And as you know, not everyone that is technically successful, competent, is going to be successful with people. It's in a truly different play field. So we work on ways to get buy-in, get influence, set your right leadership approach. That rightness also depends on your organization and your inclinations and where you want to go. So a lot of it is really a big journey where you as a UX research leader need to recognize that yourself is the greatest tool with which you need to work. So you need to generate self-awareness. You need to generate organizational awareness. You need to be deeply curious about the team you work with. So this is a process indeed.
Yeah. So what I observed when working in bigger organizations, so I mainly or only have experience from quite big organizations, people are promoted from their technical expertise. So if you're good expert, you get promoted to higher managing levels. And that's sometimes not really the right approach because, as you say, managing other people is a people's business. It's not a technical business. So and that's why often, and this was also true for myself in the beginning, you start leadership roles with a sense of chaos in your mind because new things are coming to your desk. You are maybe not trained to handle this. People are asking questions. Your manager, your management is asking questions. You're in sort of such a sandwich position maybe. I think people can be quite overwhelmed. So is this something you observe as well?
Yes.
Or is there a difference between big and small organizations maybe?
No, absolutely. I mean, for sure there would be differences across sectors, organizational culture, not just the size of the organization, but there is elements. I'm a big fan of The Culture Map, the book by Aaron Meyer, and I'm sure that whenever humans are involved, because what is an organization? It's an accumulation of individuals moving towards accomplishing a goal, right? So there's all these different factors, but I'll say a couple of things. My view, and I'll say it as a coach, but also as a UX
Als kleines Dankeschön für eure großartige Unterstützung dieses Podcasts haben wir eine Überraschung für alle Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer. Wir starten ein exklusives Gewinnspiel nur für euch, unsere Lead UX Community. Ihr seid neugierig geworden. Alle Details zum Gewinnspiel, was es gibt und wie ihr teilnehmen könnt, findet ihr direkt in den Shownotes zu dieser Folge. Viel Glück an alle, die teilnehmen. Und jetzt machen wir direkt weiter mit unserem heutigen Thema.
That being said, you know, that I always say that I said in other podcasts too, Thomas, there is a limit to how far the technical awareness and knowledge can get you. Because for me, I'm gonna say something contradictory maybe for many people, but you don't have to be the best IC technically to be the best manager. You need to know enough about your technical competency areas, what your team is building, to be able to say they have the same language, to be able to offer the right support for them. So some degree of technical awareness is necessary, but the rest isn't about competing with your ICs as a manager. Because imagine that, like, I was a great researcher, supposedly, and this is why I got promoted. I was a staff UX researcher. I was a UX research lead in many organizations. But once you are more in that coordinator leader role, you're doing less and less research. So technically, someone that's great in research, because they're going to keep working on that muscle, they're going to get better at it than you. And it's perfectly fine. You can't be doing everything all at once and be great at it. But it's important to understand then, you know, set new success metrics for yourself. You said something interesting. I want to also offer for our audience so that it's in a more entertaining conversation. Just want to pressure test some of the ideas, because I don't think it's necessarily about getting that training prior to becoming a lead or a manager. Of course, some organizations provide that. I've also taken those leadership internal trainings myself. But I think it's about learning on the go, being exposed to challenges and figuring it out as the situations unfold in front of you, which is why coaching is also so helpful for recent transitioners from senior IC roles to managerial roles, because coaching provides that space of pause and reflect and ask questions and figure out what you want to experiment with. You could say, okay, but people can do it on their own with their teams. Sure, but it offers this space where there's no conflict of interest, where you don't have to worry about what you're going to say and how that might impact your next performance review. It really is beneficial to have that moment of pause and, okay, I've been busy doing. Let me see, you know, what I've been doing and how I can do it differently and how I'm growing. So having that reflective space is helpful for new UX leaders to be intentional when moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. And also think in the beginning, you just don't know what you don't know.
you have to
learn on the go. Yeah. And definitely that's a point. And also I think exchange with others. So that's what I experienced when I talked prior to starting this podcast to other UX leaders. I realized, okay, everybody has more or less the same like challenges, I would say. And this is also something a coach could either mirror to you. So provide feedback that others maybe have. So it's not unique, the problems or challenges you might have in your new job role. And you can learn from others as well. And also, I think some frameworks can help. And yeah, with that, I would also lead over, because we like to talk about your CARE framework today, of course, that you created, I think, which also can provide some guidance for your coaches then as well. Maybe
That's
you
right.
want to introduce that in a bit more detail.
Of course. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to do so. So let me be very transparent and tell you how that framework came into being, right? Because I'm the kind of pragmatic, action-oriented professional who just doesn't be like, okay, let me have a framework to work with. Rather, this framework quite organically, Thomas, evolved after years of experience of me doing what I'm doing. First, of course, when I was still a full-time UX research leader, and then, of course, finding my business. I looked at the cases with each and every client. After right now where I am today, I had over right now 75 plus paying clients. Each individual is a universe. And I looked into what worked, what didn't, what it is that we did, what is this common thread across different cases. And this is how CARE framework was born, for me to see what we were doing. So the CARE, the C on that CARE stands for clarity. The A stands for alignment. The R, that's my favorite part in the era of AI, where one can say, okay, I can just train an AI tool and have it coach for me for free 24/7. But the R bit is resilient. That's where the human relationship, human touch, that involvement helps. And the E stands for expression. I can go deeper in each, or let me know how you want to proceed.
Yeah, so I think what people struggle with often, which also might maybe lead to some burnout experiences, if you try hard and push every day and force yourself in something which somehow isn't working. So I think this clarity part, this is a really good starting point for most people. Just get clarity about, you know, what are you, which position are you into, what your goals are, and maybe you can let's start with clarity. Let's start with
let's the C start
first.
With clarity. And you're right, because without clarity, there's no alignment, there is no resilience, there is no expression. When I say clarity, Thomas, I say it on two fronts. Of course, what you're saying is right, about, you know, where people are headed, the career goals they have. But first, let's step back and understand yourself, because once you're a leader, you are your greatest tool. You need to understand where you need to grow, where your strengths lie. So the clarity is essentially about emotional and mental self-awareness. No one is perfect, but you need to also know what distinguishes you and where you need to put yourself in ways that your unique strengths can make a difference. So this is a process about self-understanding, recognizing that calm and grounded insights and the right goals can only be born from that self-awareness. Because when my clients come in, Thomas, and they're like, I want to achieve this, I want to do that, I don't just take it for granted and go towards that goal as a copy paste, like, okay, let's do this. I want to understand first where that goal comes from. What is the goal behind the goal? What it is that they want to achieve through that goal? What's the impact they want to create? Who are they, how they think of themselves, what are the stories that they tell to themselves and others about themselves. So there is that great self-understanding that needs to be obtained, right? So clarity is about that, basically.
Yes, and that's definitely true. So also, if you work with other people, sometimes somebody's doing something which triggers a reaction.
Very much.
And if you talk to somebody else, and he or she might say, so why were you so angry? There's no reason for that. And you need to understand those processes that internally happen based also on your personal history and whatnot. And just, you know, learn that if somebody triggers a reaction, wait a second and then react. And somebody said in a previous podcast, so the seconds between trigger and reaction, that's where freedom happens. So
exactly.
in those seconds, you actually can decide what to do and how to react, or not to do and not to react. Like,
I love that, because that reaction you're discussing, Thomas, is more to do with yourself and what it is that the other person is saying or doing. That you are strongly going against. It probably is about something about yourself that you're not ready to embrace yet. This is why it's triggering, right? And so not reacting out of an impulse, but being able to make informed decisions, saying, okay, this is a situation where I'm in. These are the aspects of the situations that are within my control, and these are the aspects that are not in my control. What is the right course of action that will give me the results based on what it is that I seek and who I want to become? So this is a very intentional thing. Not that there's a right or wrong way to respond, but it needs to be intentional, right? And that intentionality is very hard to perform if you don't have the clarity to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Something else which comes to my mind as I'm a psychologist, there is a concept which is called, I think, radical acceptance or something like that. So, for example, if you go to the beach and it's super crowded, which might be often the case in Barcelona, I guess, you can be angry and say, oh, the beach is so crowded. Why is it always so crowded when I come? But radical acceptance, you would say, okay, the beach is crowded. That's how it is. I accept it. So exactly. This is also something which brings more clarity to a situation.
It does. It does. And you are very organically bringing us to the alignment part of the puzzle. You know what you're doing. So alignment is precisely about that radical acceptance, because a lot of people around us in UX especially, they are forcing certain results, forcing certain outcomes, forcing certain processes without paying attention to the factors that are not within their control, or the timing isn't right. It's just not going to click. So just like that beach example, you can just say, okay, it is what it is. It's just going to be a crowded day on the beach. I cannot control this. So I can now liberate myself from that tension of like forcing myself in a situation where the conditions aren't met. And instead, what I can do right now is to see what alternatives I've got and how to execute those and how to move forward. It's a very liberating thing to have this sort of alignment, because this is where your career and lifestyle can come together, where you're in peace with your strengths, where you can be better positioned, what limitations your current setup might offer, and say, okay, given the circumstances, can I be creative now with what I have to get the maximum impact? It's a very mature act, and the one that delivers a lot of impact.
That's true. And do you observe sometimes, or maybe even often, that people also step back then from a management or leadership role because they realized maybe it was not the right career path for them, and maybe they more go into like an expert career path?
Staff role, an expert role.
Yeah,
I have actually. I've had some clients that stepped away from the leadership positions where the success was defined by managing a team. And you're indeed right. This is not the only definition of success. I will still say something, once again, possibly controversial. I do feel that it's quite hard to know where you're going to succeed and what you're meant to do if you are not put into your situation. So even for those people, having an experience, however brief it might be, and they go back to the IC role, they'll be better ICs, because now when they interact with the leadership, they know the conversations are taking place, the challenges that they have, and what they need to achieve, and so on and so forth. So indeed, it's one approach to take, and there is absolutely nothing wrong. I even have a very similar attitude towards building my business, because it also creates set of uncertainties. And I say to myself, look, having built my small business will make me a better UXer, whether it is IC or in a leadership role down the line, if I choose to go back to an organization, because I know right now the kind of necessities and priorities an organization has. So I have a better chance of understanding where UX fits in all of that. So I think these sort of experiences that are beyond the linear path is quite helpful to many.
Yeah, so yeah, stakeholder management will be something you get better at when you've been in a more exposed management role, definitely, because as you say, you understand the issues your leadership, your management might have. And if it's more, maybe sometimes more about shipping a product than making it perfect, then you might better understand the reasons behind it, for example.
Absolutely. That's a great example. Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we talked about clarity, we talked about alignment. This brings us then to the R in the care, which
my favorite one.
Resilience.
Yeah. That's right. So resilience is my favorite for the following reason, Thomas, because you can have the greatest clarity in the world, right? You can have it in writing, you can live up to that every day, and you can have that alignment that we just described with radical acceptance and so on, knowing the boundaries within which you can be creative, but you still need resilience. Because I always tell my clients too, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint, and there'll be ups and downs. There'll be some really tough days, some of which are expected, some of which are not expected. So you really need to learn how to regulate yourself emotionally. And if you're in a leadership role, how to help your direct reports to regulate themselves emotionally, how to play that role of emotional absorption, if you want to call it that way, for your stakeholders, how to care for yourself. Because resilience is not about only constantly, putting a strong front in front of adversity. It's also about self-care. And basically, it's about generating a genuine, a steady, an empowering stance when there could be chaos around you. And that's a very important part. I really don't know a single person within UX or outside that succeeds in the long term without resilience. So this is why I bring that topic quite a lot.
Do you have certain like tasks or tools that you provide your clients with that they actually can practice also in their day-to-day life, or maybe a concrete example about how resilience can grow? So what could it be? If what could somebody do who thinks, okay, this somehow rings a bell, I need to be more resilient?
Right.
What could people actually practice in their day-to-day life?
That's right. I do group coachings and trainings and whatnot, but the bread and butter, the core of my business is in one-to-one coaching. I think that's where mostly magic happens, because we can custom make everything, right? So going back to that, because each client, each individual has a different challenge, a unique challenge towards resilience, all the journaling exercises, all the experiments we run or the check-ins I have with each of them is a different story. So there is not like a single sort of question, but there is indeed some practices that help with that. So point number one, to be able to emotionally regulate yourself in a fast-paced tech environment where there's so many maybe layoffs or reorgs or whatnot, you need to have emotional awareness first. And a lot of the times, as crazy as it might sound, despite being with yourself within your body all the time, you are so focused on what is happening and the day-to-day requirements, you might actually have a hard time checking in with yourself. So part of what coaching helps with is to create that space for you to pause with those questions and really understand where you are, what are your gut feelings about this, when you think deeper, what comes out. So it's about regularly showing up for yourself. So despite being busy with a lot of meetings you might have and a lot of Figma files to sort out or whatever, really understanding where you are and dedicating time for yourself. That's number one. Number two is, because I tend to work with high achievers, high performers, because look, they hire me because they want to get better, not necessarily because they have burnout. Some of them have had burnout experiences, but most of people are doing it not because they're obliged to by the organizations, although it's true some of them are sponsored by the organizations, but most of the people want to do better, right? That's an important part. And unfortunately, a tendency I've observed with many of my clients is that self-care comes last, only after all boxes are checked. And this is actually detrimental for a midterm and long-term success, because you need to manage your energy. Today you face a hardship, tomorrow you will too, and the next day again. So your self-care, if it is at the bottom of the list, good luck showing up for your team. Good luck having that pause, as you said, between receiving stimuli and responding it with care. So self-care is an important part, and I'm very adamant about creating space for my clients, asking them very upfront, what are you going to do this week for your self-care? And how are we going to care for yourself, both as a professional and as an individual, to make sure that not only you hit your targets, but you don't burn out, you don't get hurt, you don't get overwhelmed in the meanwhile. So that those reminders, those checkpoints, those milestones matter quite a lot.
Yeah, pretty simple, or maybe, yeah, simple example which comes to my mind, if you're in a plane and the oxygen masks come out.
It's true.
You have to create one for you at first and then help the others. Because you cannot help others if you fade out at first. So that's how you do it, basically.
It's a cliche, but it's true. It's a cliche, but it's true. Because, hey, if your basic needs aren't met, and having that long-term approach, like, you'll have a long career ahead of you. It's not one day and then you go off. It's very unlikely that it is the case. So you need to really think of not just doing your best work today, but what are the conditions that need to be met so that I can show up as the best version of myself moving forward. And this is the part where my approach is quite holistic, Thomas, too, because I tend to work with senior UXers and they tend to, I'm generalizing, of course, be at a period of their lives where they might, you know, become parents, or they might need to have caring duties for elderly ones in their families. There is also a lot that is happening that is demanding our energy, time, and attention for things that are happening around us. So you gotta self-care, for sure.
Great, great. Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of learnings for our listeners, definitely to get more resilient. And finally, the care ends with an E. This brings up to the final, the framework. Letter in the framework, the care framework, which is expression. So we talked about stakeholder management already, and I guess it's somehow related to, you know, expressing what your needs and your goals are. But yeah, maybe you can explain that in a bit more detail as well.
Exactly. Thank you. So far, we talked about clarity. We touched upon alignment, and we've just wrapped up a conversation around resilience. And now it's time to talk about expression. I feel extremely strongly about this one. It competes with the resilient element, Thomas, for one major reason. I have talked with over 1,000 UXers through discovery sessions, conferences, meetings, client sessions and whatnot. And it seems to be an overwhelming reality that most people feel quite cringe posting on LinkedIn. It feels like they're selling themselves too hard. It feels inauthentic. So self-expression as part of personal branding and advocacy for their work is quite hard. It's hard for director level. It's hard for manager level. Senior IC level, people are having hard time to do it. There is somehow a lot of guilt and shame even associated with it. People are uncomfortable with it. Some of them are fighting against it because, like, hey, you know, I do my work. My work should speak for itself. And the answer, especially in today's economy, is a big fat no. It is what it is. True. If you're going to hate me for it, we probably shouldn't work together. That's a great clarity going back to the full circle. So what do I mean by that? Obviously, I'm not in for, you know, those horrible LinkedIn posts where people show a picture of themselves proposing for their life partner and saying, here is what proposing to my wife taught me about B2B marketing. That's a horrible. This is not what I mean. This is terrible. But what I mean is the following. If you are a senior UX professional, your job, more than anything, inside of your organization, as well as outside, is to unravel your thinking process, right? How do you approach problems? What are the questions you ask yourself and others? When there is something new, such as, for instance, in the EU recently, there is new legislation for tech organizations in handling, of course, you know, the information that they have to show, the accessibility matters online and whatnot. You need to have a stance for it. You need to make that stance explicit. So it's less about, for instance, applying this case to myself, giving myself the opportunity to share those ideas. When I post, and I post every day on LinkedIn from Monday to Friday every morning, I post regularly at UX Collective on Medium, on Substack, I write articles, whatnot. It's not about me, work with me, I'm amazing, this is cringe, this is horrible, but this is about using my experience, knowledge, personality, the kind of questions I ask, my critical thinking, to share value with others, help them see the ways that I work. And there's one key component in everything I post, that it is in my best of abilities to deliver value to others. So,
Yeah, I like what you say about, you know, revealing the thought process, because of course you do not know the answers to all the questions, but you know, you maybe know how to ask the right questions to find the answers.
Exactly. So I don't care if you're hired currently or if you're looking for a job. It's quite possible if you're working in 2025, is where you are working today is not where you're going to work in 20 years from now. There's a great possibility that the organization that you're going to be get your work now will be acquired, or there's going to be a rework, or you'll end up finding a new opportunity somewhere else, or you're going to build your own thing. There is a lot of movement, right? So this is time that you think of your career as the most important product you're building. And if you're building a product, you cannot do it in secret. You really need to generate visibility around it. So I help through this framework to switch from a position of hiding out of shame or out of guilt, or like, you know, I feel bad about posting, occupying space. What if I don't get enough likes? What if people leave a comment that is aggressive? Like, there's all these fears surrounding that level of visibility, to a place where you can be strategic. Of course, not posting anything about everything, but thinking about, okay, what are the gaps in what I do? How do I want to be known if people search for me online? What kind of thought process of mine do I want them to see? Where do I deliver critical value? Asking all those questions and making your work expressive is really key, both inside of your organization and outside. Sure, your work is amazing, but if no one really knows about it, no one really knows the thought process that comes to it, that is including portfolios, Thomas. How many portfolios have you read where people talk about, I did this, I did that, but why did you do all those things? What were the thoughts that came into it? What were the trade-offs? How did you communicate those bits? So these are the juicy parts that is important not to shy away from, to express quite openly.
Yeah, definitely. So in my last job, I had the chance also to build up a UX team. And in job interviews, I always ask those questions. So the results, not so interesting, but why did you do what you did and what were your learnings? So
exactly.
The thought process is exactly that's
exactly
that's interesting. Yeah, and
this is so exciting because just imagine, like, there's a lot of portfolios. I'm sure you've seen some during your hiring manager roles, and myself as a coach and a previous hiring manager too. People tend to narrate the story such that everything they've done was so obvious, like they haven't considered an alternative. They had the immediate buy-in of their teams and stakeholders. It's hardly ever the case. You, as a senior UXer especially, are navigating ambiguity, are navigating uncertainty. And it's important that you expand on the factors you consider, how you articulate those, on what basis you consider those, and how you move forward. This is the part where you can really show thought leadership. And so what is the following? Attract the right people, attract the right opportunities for the kind of things that you are willing and able to do. This is the bottom line, essentially. So
yes, and from my marketing colleagues, I also learned, you know, people buy from people, and people buy brands they like, and not maybe because the product is the best, maybe it is, but people buy products because they like the brand and they like the people behind it, and that's why you have to show who you are as your personal brand. And yeah, it's as you say, not to show off, but to get others to know you better as a professional UX person. And somebody would like what you think, others maybe not. But then, as you say, you attract the people that
would
think the same, something like that. Yeah,
I love it. Maybe for the podcast audience, Thomas, one thing I'll go ahead and say that could be an actionable tip for everyone is to forget about yourself and focus on the question you're sharing, the process you're going to describe. Because a lot of the times the hardship is about putting yourself out there. But if you're fascinated and focused enough to your message, you become invisible in a good way, right? So I told you, from Monday to Friday on LinkedIn, every single day I post, unless of course it's a Christmas holiday, there is this major holiday, whatever. And I'll be transparent. I share my face a lot because a lot of what I do is very personal. It's important that people start to identify with me. They feel familiar with me, with my presence. But essentially the content that I share, what I talk about, I forget about myself because I do think like the care framework, or I talk about how the new accessibility laws in Europe will change how UXers need to rethink their roles, or the UX burnout study. I'm not thinking about what people are going to think of me, how do I come across through this. I'm genuinely interested in sharing that message, asking those questions, and helping people leave that post knowing something they haven't known before to be better at what they do and feel better about themselves, feel more empowered. So once you think in those terms, forget about yourself and focus on the message, it is more fun and also easier.
Yeah, so great tips. I like that, that people, you know, can learn for their day-to-day life what they actually can do and how they can improve and move on with their career. So do you finally have maybe some examples of career transitions people took based on applying your care framework? Is there something outstanding or something typical that you observe what happens when people actually apply the care framework in their day-to-day life?
Nice, the impact of it.
Yeah, the impact.
Right. I work with a lot of career transitioners. A group of those are coming to UX. So let's say they were academic researchers, and then they go into UX. Some of them are actually transitioners out of UX. So they've been UX professionals, and now they're building their own thing, or they're doing something like accessibility officer for their government in their respective country. Sure, they're not going to be an official UXer, but everything they've learned over the process will color how they're going to do their role. And finally, some of the people I work with, they are individual contributors and they are now new leaders, or they were managers, now they're directors, and the kind of leadership, what it means, and the levels with which they engage are quite different. And for each of those, we apply the care framework. Of course, the speed with which we apply, what we find. And one thing I strongly care about, Thomas, is not just the sessions. Sometimes we have an hour session biweekly, monthly, or in some occasions weekly. Those are very important, but I give equal importance to the async exercises, experiments. People call it different things. So when the care framework, the way in which it becomes helpful is when we apply to real questions with a time scope and real actions that people can take and learn. So this makes transition a lot more applicable, so that I don't care if you're going to see each other once a month or once in 2 weeks or whatnot. There is a, you know, resilience component built into what you'll be doing. There's going to be things you're being going to do, so you're going to be more clear, and you're going to increase that alignment, and you're going to express yourself, network relentlessly along the way. So in those bits, both async and sync, these bits apply.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah, great. So finally, I know that quite some listeners are thinking about, you know, transitioning into a leading role or maybe taking the expert path. So if somebody thinks about whether or not to take a leadership role or has been asked by his management to take on leadership role or not, what would be one recommendation for aspiring managers or team leads to consider or to think about whether or not to move on forward with a leadership career?
That's right. My take, I'll circle back to what we said earlier, Thomas, is that fundamental question. Do you want to succeed with the task at hand, or do you want to succeed through influencing people? Influencing people, in this case, the lead role, the manager role, and so on, can pay off dramatically because it can happen at scale. Even the best individual contributor, however fast and efficient they might work, there's a limit to what they can do at any given moment. But when you're in a leadership role, your influence can really scale massively because you're operating through people. And, you know, they have a lot less limited capacity in total, right? So some people, like myself, I'm deeply energized through influencing people. For instance, my role today, not to say that coaching is the only important part of management. However, good managers, good leaders are coaches. Research has proven that look at many sources at Harvard Business Review and so on. So you need to ask yourself, wait a minute, do I feel energized or frustrated when I do this challenging and ambiguous work of working through people? I'm not here to say that it's always going to be fun or always going to be challenging, but ideally, when you look at the numbers, you need to be more uplifted than overwhelmed. And if you feel like, look, I just want to have, you know, individual contributor role, of course, I'm going to mentor people and I'm going to pass on my knowledge, but I don't want to be personally responsible for moving a team, setting the vision for them, empowering them, and be quite responsible to co-responsible rather in their career trajectory. If these are the things that don't motivate you necessarily, that probably is not the right one. Only you have the answer, basically.
Yes, that's true. So you need to think about what drains energy and what gives energy back to you in your daily work. So great. And exactly. If somebody's looking for sort of a running mate in this transition, of course, we will provide your contact details.
That's and
everything
amazing.
In the show notes, of course.
I love it. And I love building long-term partnerships based on trust. So whether I work with someone directly or not, I can be connected with them on LinkedIn. I love it if they say hi. My posts are there to deliver value. So is my articles, my research on burnout and other things. And I'd be super helpful to learn from them as well, because once we're connected, I'll get to see their posts and what they're up to.
Great. Yeah. So definitely we are happy to get everyone connected with you. And it was really great talking to you in detail about your care framework and your approach to career coaching in the UX field, which is currently changing, but it's also, it provides new opportunities for people coming in, I think, as well. And yeah, thanks a lot for your time. It was really a great talk. Lots of learnings for the listeners. Thanks a lot, Mel.
Thank you for having me. I genuinely mean what I say. Of course, there'll be a few people that will end up collaborating, and there'll be those that we don't, but I do hope that this care framework will be helpful for people to apply on their own, with their colleagues, maybe together with their managers. I do really feel strongly about the impact that it can create for UXers.
Great, great. Sounds good. And thanks again for your time. It was great. And yeah, see you maybe at the World Usability Congress.
Amazing. See you.
All right. See you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And thanks to all the listeners for taking the time to listen to LeadUX, the User Experience Leadership Circle. As I said, we're happy to hear from you. And until next time, bye-bye.